Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya. Naram caiva narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Dayam Udirayet Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Bhagavat Hitya Sevaya Ratsevaya Bhagavat Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Hare Krishna. So we are reading fifth canto, which entitled The Creative Impetus, and we are almost at the point where there will be the description of the universe. But before, the chapter is chapter 14, the material world as the great forest of enjoyment. Text 12, which is nice Sanskrit prose. And we have to read it. Sa yada dugdha purva sukritas tada karaskara kakatunda dyu punya drumalata vishoda panavat ubhayartha shunya dravinan jivam ritam svayam jivam niyamana upadhavati. No, fixed melody. Do you repeat usually this? No, it's not. Okay. Saha, that conditioned soul. Yada, when. Dugdha, exhausted. Purva, previous. Sukritaha, pious activities. Tada, at that time. Karaskara, karak. Kakatundadi, named Karaskara, Kakatunda, etc. They are names of the trees. Apunya Drumalata, impious trees and creepers. Visha Udapanavat, like wells with poisonous water. Ubhaya artha shunya, which cannot give happiness, either in this life or in the next. Dravinan, those who possess wealth. Jivat mritan, who are dead, although apparently alive. Svayam, he himself. Jivat, living. Mriyamanah, being dead. Upadhavati, approaches for material acquisition. Translation by His Divine Grace, Sri Prabhupada Kidai. Due to his pious activities in previous lives, the conditioned soul attains material facilities in this life, but when they are finished, he takes shelter of wealth and riches, which cannot help him in this life or the next. Because of this, he approaches the living dead, who possesses these things. Such people are compared to impure trees, creepers, and poisonous wells. Repeat, please. Due to his pious activities in previous lives, the conditioned soul attains material facilities in this life. But when they are finished, he takes shelter of wealth and riches, which cannot help him in this life or the next. Because of this, he approaches the living dead who possess these things. Such people are compared to impure trees, creepers, and poisonous wells. Purport. The wealth and riches acquired through previous pious activities should not be misused for sense gratification. Enjoying them for sense gratification is like enjoying the fruits of the poisonous tree. Such activities will not help the conditioned soul in any way, neither in this life nor the next. However, if one engages his possessions in the service of the Lord under the guidance of proper spiritual master, he will attain happiness both in this life and the next. Unless he does so, he eats a forbidden apple and thereby loses his paradise. Lord Sri Krishna therefore advises that one's possessions should be given unto him. Yat karoshi, yat asnashi, yat juhoshi, dadashi, yat, yat tapasyashi kauntya, tat kurusva mat arpanam. O son of Kunti, that all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Bhagavad Gita 9:27. Material wealth and opulence attained through previous pious activities can be fully utilized for one's benefit in this life and the next, if one is Krishna conscious. One should not try to possess more than he needs for bare necessities. If one gets more than is needed, the surplus should be fully engaged in Lord's service. That will make the conditioned soul, the world, and Krishna happy. And this is the aim of life. Hare Krishna. Giving material wealth away. That's the aim of life. Yes? No. No. The aim of life is to make Krishna happy. That's the aim of life. We can use material wealth and use facilities we have, but the aim of life is not to give them because they don't belong to us. Okay? Don't think that anything belongs to you. No. The only thing we can offer Krishna is our devotion. And this is the only thing that pleases Krishna. Not wealth, not possession. So that's a way of pleasing Krishna. To make him happy. Okay, this is a wonderful chapter, and this chapter is like it's very advanced knowledge, frankly speaking, because this is the at this point the student of Srimad Bhagavatam distinguishes between body and soul and heard how intelligence by the story of King Prachina Barhishat in the fourth canto and how he meets intelligence, means his wife and all the story entanglement. He knows that he is different from the body. And now it's this chapter after Jadabharat. Mistake and fall down and rebirth as a deer and then as Jadabharat. So we know that the material world is quite dangerous place. It's not easy. It's said that devotional the process of bhakti is like. Or spiritual life is like walking on the edge of the razor, so you have to be very careful. And this is all explained here. And then this is analogy, of course, the razor and etc. And that, because we understand very much and very clearly things by analogies, that's why this analogy of the comparison of the material world to the forest of enjoyment. This is a very great analogy, and this is one more attempt of the Vyasadeva or the sages to make us aware where we are in fact. And because the whole the study of Srimad Bhagavatam is to detach us from the material world and to attach to Krishna. So the fifth chapter is we are in the middle of the way, okay? Because fifth canto begins from the Krishna's pastime. So fifth canto is this, we are in the middle of the way to being attached to Krishna. Okay, so we are being taught very hard lesson, and the whole this analogy basically destroys all our illusions regarding finding or seeking and finding pleasure in the material world. It's described that material world is the forest. There are so many details described of this forest that if you want to look around in the material world and find something, you can immediately find something which is reflected in this analogy. But why the forest, we may ask? Have you been to the forest? It's nice in the forest. It's clean, there are roads, and you can go, and sometimes if you go off the road, it's hard, but not too much. Because our experience, the modern forest, or at least, let's say, European forests, are not the real forests which are the wild. Have you been ever to wild forest? I mean real wild forest, like Amazon forest or where? Jungle, yes, jungle. All the forest which is not cultivated, because all we have here, in Europe, like even 2,000 years ago, let's say, before the civilization started to grow there, most of the Europe was covered by the forest, okay? And this was the wild forest. So now Europe, the forestation, let's say, in Europe, or deforestation went so far because of development of technology, that in Europe there is like 20% of land is covered by forest, no more. It's very little left for all. So we cannot see real forest in here. All what you see, it's a forest which was grown because there is the whole industry of growing forest. Okay, you just plant forest in nice rows. You plant trees in nice rows, and now you go to the forest. You can see, you stand in one place, so you see nice rows of the trees. But this is not how the real forest look. Wild forest. In Poland, we have forest. Yes, Surya, we have forest in Poland. Poland has 30% of forestation, so it's like one of the most it's one of the countries which has more forest than average, and this is called Puszcza Białowieska. Don't repeat this word. And so you can go there and you can see how the forest looked like 1,000 years ago, because they don't do anything. This is quite a big area. It's a east of Poland, and it reaches further east up to Ukraine or something. So it's a quite big piece of forest, and you go there, you can feel the real mood of the forest. It means you go there, it's dark. That's the first thing you notice. The trees grow so tightly that it's dark. And then there is a humidity, and then basically you cannot walk easily through the forest. There are, because the old trees are falling down and they die on the ground, so to walk through this wild forest, it's not like you walk through the path. You have to struggle to go through. Because if you go to this forest, it's nice, you can go through the forest, no fallen trees. Where are the fallen trees? Trees die. But it's not... because this forest are there are people who take care, who take the fallen trees, etc., etc. But wild forest is not like that. It's everything, it's a big mess. Okay? So it's hard to walk, hard to live there even. So this is the analogy. That's the very appropriate analogy given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that this material world is like a forest. It's very difficult to go through. But still, it is said that people who are in illusion, they try to find something in this forest. So what is illusion? Illusion is about finding pleasure in the material world. So because we are trying to find pleasure here, we enter this forest, and the analogy is that we enter this forest and we try to use all the resources that are in the forest for our pleasure. And this is the way how we exploit the material world. We do this just to satisfy our senses in different ways. And here, in particular, in this verse, we have explanation of the person who takes shelter of wealth and riches. Okay, and the wealth and riches are finished, then he approaches someone who have wealth and riches. So Śrīla Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakur explains that technically this verse and previous verse 11 and 12, they explain the analogy given in the fifth verse of the 13th chapter, which originally Jada Bharat gave this analogy, because in the 14th chapter Śukadeva Goswami explained this analogy again to Maharaja Parikshit. So in 13:5, it is said that basically it's the same. That wandering in the forest of the material world, the conditioned soul sometimes hears the invisible cricket making harsh sounds, and his ears become very much aggrieved. Sometimes his heart is pained by the sound of owls, which are just like the harsh words of his enemies. So these forest animals, they dwell in this deep wild forest. We cannot hear them much in this forest, but in wild forest this is their home. And this part of the verse 13:5 is explained in the verse 11, that this owls and crickets are government servants, and the who chastise the merchant who went to the forest. And then the second part of the verse is, sometimes he takes shelter of a tree that has no fruit or flowers. He approaches such a tree due to his strong appetite, and thus he suffers. He would like to acquire water, but he is simply illusioned by a mirage, and he runs after it. So this tree that has no fruits and flower, it's explained in the verse 12. So this is the person who acquires wealth, who has wealth, but is not using, as Prabhupada is explaining, for to please Krishna, but is using to please his senses. Because we don't have much choice in the material world. Our choice is we satisfy Krishna or we satisfy our senses. And one may ask, okay, what about, because the verse mentions also that due to his pious activities in previous life. So what we are living in the material world and we are pious, does it satisfy Krishna? So that's the great question about the piety and piety. And basically the answer is also simple, but to understand it, it's not so easy, because whatever you do, pious or impious, is entangling you in the material world. So basically, pious activities don't give you the credit of pleasing Krishna. So only devotional service can get you out of the forest of material enjoyment. So if you are pious or impious, it doesn't matter, in fact. It doesn't matter as far as liberation from the material world or as far as attaining pure devotional service is concerned, because being pious, it's very good if you want to please Krishna. It's like with the cooking. When you cook something and you burn one preparation, this is like the impious activity, because you didn't follow the recipe or you spaced out, so you burned something. So then you cannot offer this to Krishna. So this is impious activity. It's something you cannot use in any way. But pious activity is when you follow the recipe and you did something nicely, and then you can offer to Krishna and please Krishna. So the piety is more conducive to please Krishna. But only by the piety, you cannot attain pure devotional service, because piety, it's like good cooking. You are a good cook, and you are cooking nicely. But if you don't offer this to Krishna, there is no use of your cooking. So if piety is not used for satisfying the Supreme, or pleasing, as it was said at the end, it's not useful at all. So this, but the point of pleasing Krishna is very important, because to please Krishna, there are no conditions to please Krishna. You can please Krishna just by performing devotional service, and devotional service doesn't depend on anything. So devotional service or bhakti is independent, completely independent. And this independence is even to such extent that Lord Chaitanya was giving the bhakti, or is giving bhakti freely to everyone, despite the piety or impiety. So by pious activities, one can get a credit. By pious activity, one can give a credit, and pious activity, or following the rules, gives you a nice position in the material world. You are perfectly pacified. You are happy, and it's a nice platform to begin the devotional service. But it's not something that generates devotional service. So piety is good, because gives you facilities, but this is not all. And it is said in the verse that when the pious activities are the results of pious activities are finished, then, because as long as you are pious, you can live peacefully, because you are following all the rules, you are following dharma, there is no discrepancies, no much obstacles in your material life. But when it is finished, the verse says that then you take shelter of wealth and riches. So this is the way of helping oneself in the material world without pious assets. So you don't have more pious assets. All your bank account with a pious accumulated pious acts. It's empty. So now you have to work hard to get wealth and to maintain yourself in the material world. Because still we are talking about the position of the person who is in the material world and who wants to stay in the material world, who doesn't know that there is something more than that. And this topic of the pious and pious activities can be developed more as we understand, if we understand that piety or impiety, because this is the important point to understand about all which is connected with a devotional service and change of the consciousness, that as pious and impious activities, the difference between pious and impious activities is based on the simple rule: you follow the injunctions of the scriptures or not. If you follow, you are pious. If not, you are not pious. The same is very simple with the devotional service or Krishna consciousness, of being Krishna conscious, of or serving Krishna or pleasing Krishna and pleasing senses. This is just the way how you perceive the material world. So let's first discuss the pious and sinful activities. So let's say there is a man who has the machine gun. Okay, boys like this type of analogy, so I use this. Ladies have to excuse me. So you take the machine gun and you kill 20 people with one row, okay? So the mechanics of shooting, it's simple. You just take the gun and you shoot. But it can be a pious act or can be impious act. Why? How come? If you do this in the supermarket, it's a sin. You are a murderer. But if you do the same on the battlefield, you are the hero. Okay? So, the piety and impiety, this is the difference. If you follow the authority, okay, so you practically do the same thing which all the people do, but your actions are authorized, and in this way you are pious. Okay, so you go to the kitchen, you cut potatoes, you cook, etc., etc. If you do this because of temple commanders tells you, you are not only pious, but you are pleasing Krishna, you are following the authority. But if you do this just in some restaurant outside, you do the same thing, but you work for your sin, because in this restaurant they cook and they don't offer, and etc. So this is the difference. And the same difference, oh, not the same, but a similar way, we can apply this to the devotional service. Devotional service is the activity to please Krishna. So you can do all activities you do now, but you have to choose the goal of this activity. So when you go shopping, you have to know clearly for whom you are shopping. Okay, if you go to the swimming pool, you have to think, why I'm going to the swimming pool? To please Krishna or to please my senses? Okay, it's I'm not saying that going to swimming pool is bad. No, you can go to swimming pool, for example, to rest or to relax, because as Bhagavad Gita says, the yoga is the balanced way of life. So you can you have to have the balance time for the work and the also for the rest, to taking rest. So if or to relax, if the way of the that you rest or relax is swimming, so go swimming, but it has to be in the context of your hard work before and your hard work after. So that's, you can go to the swimming pool. So that's the point. We can in this way analyze all our activities and decide why we are doing particular things, if we are doing them for our pleasure or for the pleasure of Krishna. And that's what we should do. Or it would be good to do even every day. Because as spirit soul is never inactive, so we perform activities all day long. And it's nice to know that our activities are pleasing Krishna, because ultimately our goal is to go back home. So that's the basic line of all our activities, to go back home. And now we can go more into details of the purport, because this what this was just general reflections about the verse. But in the purport, Prabhupada writes very interesting thing, referring to the forbidden apple and loss of paradise. So this refers more to our Western tradition, which is based on Christianity, on the Bible, of the biblical story about Adam and Eve, who ate the forbidden apple from the tree, and they lost the paradise. So there is a Bhavishya Purana. Have you heard about Bhavishya Purana? This is Purana who describes the future. Okay, there are predictions about future, about different personalities who appear in the future. There is prediction of Lord Chaitanya, Buddha, etc. So Bhavishya Purana describes the story Because the missing point, at least for the Western reader of Srimad Bhagavatam, is the cultural background, which is very important, and it's being acquired only when you probably are born in India. So this missing cultural aspect is that Vedas are the source of all knowledge, and Vedas are the source of all culture. So all cultures which appeared, or which we know from our Western history, are like are sprouting from the Vedic culture, which is the most ancient, and which was from from the very beginning of the creation. But the beginning for us is like beginning of you know, the cycle of yugas. Let's say that the beginning was that there was only Vedic culture, okay, and there was nothing else. And then we slowly progressed toward the Kali Yuga, and on this progression, the Vedic culture has been diminished, and has been there were accidents, like the Vedas were stolen from Lord Brahma and then restored, and that they are going on all the time, and that's why Krishna said that he appears a millennium after a millennium to restore all this knowledge. But the knowledge and the Vedas are diminishing age by age. So now at the beginning of the Kali Yuga, we have some remnants of the original culture, but still this culture becomes less and less prominent. And that's why the Lord Chaitanya's movement, the Lord Chaitanya's prediction about next 10,000 years of the restoration of the Vedic culture, at least the essence, means the chanting of the holy name and the devotional service. But while this process of diminishing of the Vedic culture was in progress, so from the very center, which still is the India of the heart of the Vedic culture, at least of this what was left. So it is said basically that India is like this the central station of the whole world. Okay, it's the central. If you want to go to the, you know, there are different trains going different directions, but there is one central station. So the central station is India. So from this station, there were different culture sprouting, and Bhavishya Purana says about the culture we belong to, means culture of the Mlechas. Mlechas are basically those who do not follow Vedas and indulge in sinful activities like meat eating, etc. So we were born in the realm of the Mlecha culture. So this Mlechas, they are part of the human species, let's say. So we are the part of the human species. Like there are 8,400,000 different types of living entities, and 400,000 are the humans. So mlechas are ones, and they were always, but always the core heart of the human species were the Aryans, those who were preserving the Vedic culture. So the Bhavishya Purana says that there was one king, and don't ask me for the name of this king. He was in the realm of course of the Vedic culture, but he was fighting with the mlechas, and those mlechas killed him. So his son was very upset about the fact that the mlechas killed his father, and he decided to perform mlecha yagya. So mlecha yagya was, if you know Mahabharata, you know what was the king Janamejaya performed the big sacrifice because he was upset about the death of Parikshit. So he made snake yagya. Yes, so he called all the snakes from all the universe and burned them almost all of them in the yagya. So mlecha yagya was the similar yagya. So he did the yagya, and he said that this arena for yagya, because you perform yagya, you build the arena, the whole. There was like 40 kilometers in size. Okay, so it was quite big yagya. So that's why Prabhupada said that nowadays you cannot perform yagyas properly because there are no qualified priests, etc. Because to build the arena, you have to have all the calculations, and to build the 40-kilometer arena of yagya and then fire in the middle, it was quite an enterprise. So you need quite of money. So you have to be quite pious. So they built this arena, and then they burnt all the mlechas. So they chanted mantras. That in Bhavishya Purana says they chanted all the mantras, and all the mlechas from all over the world just fell into the fire, and there were no mlechas anymore. But this is now how the world is like. So the mlechas, or the sinful living beings, or sinful human beings, are always, because that's the material world. We are not here because we are much pious or saintly. The opposite. We are here because we are not saintly. So saying about pious and impious in the material world is like saying that because material world is compared to the prison. So basically, in saying that pious and impious in material world means that there are different categories of prisoners in the prison. Okay, so you have to have the golden chain, or the chain from just ordinary metal. So if you have golden chain or handcuffs, you are pious. Or if you have ordinary metal, so you are sinful. But the point is you are chained. So, but anyway, so, and Bhavishya Purana says that after this mlecha yagya, there was no more mlechas, but the one of the kings in this dynasty who was ruling the kingdom, he was greatly impious. So he was taking so much taxes from the citizens, he was harassing them, he was not protecting them properly. So because of these sins, he became black. So his skin became black. So this was visible, by this. And so Bhavishya Purana says that by this, this was the, all the brahmanas, his, because brahmanas are always in the association of the king, so they advised him. So they didn't find it very nice that the king is black. They preferred him to not to be black. So they performed another yajna to remove this blackness. But they transferred all these sins which were which appeared in the form of the dark color of the skin to the tree. Okay? So this tree was like a sinful tree. Okay, a tree of sin. And then Bhavishya Purana says about the Prince Adam and Princess Hawa, who happened to live in this kingdom. And because this was forbidden tree, this was something that there was nobody could eat from this tree. So, but somehow or other, it says that one of the demigods took the form of a serpent or something like that. So somehow or other, they were forced to, therefore, they were tempted to eat the fruit from this tree. And in this way, they became sinful because the tree was had the sins from the king, so by eating the fruit, they became sinful. So you recognize, of course, this story. So, and by this, they became lechers. So they were banned from the kingdom, which was, because it was ruled according to the Vedic rules, it may resemble a paradise. If we look for the descriptions of the how Maharaj Yudhishthira was ruling in the first canto, or Prithu Maharaj in the fourth canto, this description of how the kingdom was functioning was quite impressive. That in this description we can read that the earth was not only producing the grains and all the fruits of itself, but it was like presenting them to the king, to the pious king. The earth was so favorable that there was no need for cultivating the soil. The weather was so nice that the rain was falling only at night, and then during the day there was sun. So there were the animals were not attacking people. The people were very pleasing to each other. They're very, very, very nice to each other. So all these are the real descriptions of the kingdom, which is ruled by the pious king according to the Vedic injunctions. So then, when you compare this to the culture of the mlechas, which is full of sinful activities, which is full of struggle, which is based in the opposite of the Vedic culture on the gratification of the senses, then you can understand, for example, the idea of a paradise and losing the paradise. So this is what is meant when, at least according to the Vedic philosophy and theology, this is what is meant when you speak about eating the fruit or forbidden apple from the tree. So basically, if you stop acting piously, means as I mentioned before, that to act piously means act according to the authority. If you stop following authority, you start leading the sinful life. And basically what I remember from my school years and years at the university and years spent in the society as a member of the society, the Western society, the fact of undermining and not obeying authority is something from which mleczas or sinful people take pride. It's something that is very much appreciated. When you watch all the movies, and there are quite a number of movies about the thieves and other sinful people, but they are presented in a very nice way. They are clever, they are intelligent. They have sometimes they behave nicely toward weak or something, so they have charitable disposition. But basically, the basic motivation of their activities is to do something against the authority. That's the drive. Then you leave. Then you are real man, or there you are. You do something for real when you disobey the authority, because they, means they, authority, they always do wrong. Okay, that's the motto, that's the slogan of the Western society: they and me. Okay, it's not there is no connection. Okay, the Vedic culture is that the opposite. There is connection, there is authority, and authority is always taking care. Someone who has authority, who is in the position of authority, and the ultimate authority is the Krishna, is always taking care, is always loving, is always helping, is always thinking about your welfare, not about his own welfare. This is the last thing the authority thinks about, his own welfare, his own self. No, the authority thinks first and above about the welfare of the subordinate. That's the nature of the authority. But one may say, okay, because the authority in Kali Yuga is not like that, then the heroes like Robin Hood or others who go against the authority. But that's, again, that's one can say Kali Yuga mentality. Robin Hood, he may do good, okay, but he was the exception. But now in the with Kali Yuga mentality, we think, okay, Robin Hood, he went against authority and he was good. So I can go against authority and also be good. No, there are exceptions. To every rule there are exceptions. But we have this tendency that we see the exception and then immediately we say, there is exception, so rule doesn't work. No, the rule works. And Robin Hood might be good man, okay, but if you want to follow him, you have to be excellent archer and be born as a prince, etc. So if you follow this at least two principles, these two things, that you are archer or you are skillful in weapons, so, or I don't know what is the modern equivalent for Robin Hood, you have to be I don't know, Aikido master or something, I don't know. But if you do so, you are some. Then you may be considered an exception when you may sometimes go against the authority. But no, we tend to think that okay, there is the exception. We go against someone went against the authority, so we also are allowed to go against the authority. So that's the difference, the basic difference between the Vedic and Mlecha culture, the following the authority. It's there also the difference between being pious and impious, the following the authority. And then when you follow the authority, everything is prosperous and everything flourish. If you see any problems within the community, within yourself even, then try to look at this from the point of view. Am I, ask yourself a question, am I following authority? Or what, you can ask the second question, or question, how do you call this question, which support the main question? Supportive question? No. Additional question. So, first, am I following the, because this is obvious question, am I following the authority? The answer to the question, am I following the authority, is always yes. This is no doubt. But then the supporting question, what authority, whose authority I am following? Okay. Am I following the authority of Krishna and his representatives? Or am I following the authority of my own mind? Okay. Or of my own whims? Means basically the mind. So there is no way of not following the authority, one can say. Okay, but now, the following the authority in our case, in the case of devotees who want to go back home to Krishna, is what authority or whose authority we are following? Are we following the authority of Krishna and his representative, or we are following the authority of our mind? So, at this point I will stop. It's 5 to 9. Please, if you have comments, please leave the comment. Or you have questions, please ask the question. Now is the time. Yes, it's that's why Prabhupada said that spiritual life is difficult, but material life is impossible. Because that's why the bhakti or Krishna consciousness is the only way in Kali Yuga. Because in Krishna consciousness we still have easy task. We have one authority, it's Krishna or his representative. And that's the very clear line of authority. There is no doubt. You cannot be bewildered about who is the authority in Krishna consciousness. Okay, it's always Krishna and Guru. Or if you are live in the community, because not everyone lives in the community of devotees. But if someone works outside, so that's different. But if you live in the community of devotees, there are certain structure. It's temple president, it's temple commander, etc. So this is the line of that. So this is clear. But in the material world, it's always struggle with the authority, because as you said, the authorities are also not representing anything except their minds, perhaps, and their ideas, which are most of the time based on the minds. If they are even based on the scriptures, they are not the Vedic scriptures. It's not also authoritative. Any other scriptures besides Vedas is not taken as the authoritative. Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Vishya Purana. Adam and Eve.
Oh, it's in the Puranas?
Yeah, Vishya Purana. Oh. Yeah.